Hello, everyone, and welcome to an FWFB Concept Podcast. Only today we're going to take a little mini break from concepts, and we're going to do a topic podcast. I thought, since we are being so generous as to give you an all-star break podcast, that we would do something sort of a mid-season. We make a natural break in the fantasy baseball season at the all-star break, and that is where we've gotten to. So I have my steady Eddie partner in crime on Mondays. That is Dr. Andrew Dewhurst. Andrew Dewhurst, how are you, brother?
I'm doing well, thanks. How are you today, Chuck?
Good. How is the process towards your doctorate going at the moment?
As slow as could possibly be. I mean, there's only probably, 12 years left, I guess.
Well, that's not bad. Going part-time, I understand how that can happen. You're a family man as well, sir. What I decided the topic was is I wanted to throw out there the best value, the BVP and the LVP of fantasy baseball for until the All-Star break. And I wanted to do that in a way a lot of the breakouts and stuff sort of happen over the radar. And I wanted to do some stuff that I think is actually flying under the radar, which is going to seem odd here with our first player. So let's get right to it. The first player I want to talk about is a guy that I think should be in the discussion for the American League MVP. Somehow he's hidden in Cleveland, and his name is Jose Ramirez. First of all, Andrew, do you have shares in Jose Ramirez, and have you taken stock in exactly how remarkable his season has gone to this point?
I do have stock of Jose Ramirez, not as much stock as I would have liked in the preseason, mostly just because of where I drafted it in most of my drafts, is that I was in like top five, so he was just wasn't available coming back to me. But I was very high on Jose Ramirez coming into the season. Have him in in my home league, which is a keeper league, I managed to acquire him late last year for a first round pick and Rafael Devers. So that trade looks pretty good right now. The concern about Jose Ramirez was that people didn't think the power was for real. But right now it looks like the power is very, very real, as he's a home run shy from being 30-20 at the All-Star break.
All right, my cousin is a very loyal listener to Dave Zimmerman, is his name, and he will really appreciate this shout-out because you mentioned that you acquired Jose Ramirez for a relative song. I acquired Jose Ramirez last year, even up for Jacob Faria.
Wow.
That looks pretty good right now, doesn't it?
Not bad at all.
Anyway, I made a comparison chart for you guys. I did my homework for today to help out a very, very busy Andrew Dewhurst in part here. Okay, I did a chart of Jose Ramirez right now versus Jose Altuve. Okay, first of all, let's see how good you are at this game. How old is Jose Altuve? You know that, Andrew? Dead air, Andrew? Andrew?
Sorry. Off the top of my head, I think he's 30.
Nope, he's only
31.
He's only 28. Anyway, okay. But Jose Ramirez, do you know how old he is?
25.
He is 25. That's right. Okay. First of all, Altuve has a .332 batting average, which is great. Okay. Jose Ramirez is hitting .302, which is certainly more than serviceable in this day and age. Stolen bases is an area that you probably drafted Altuve for with reliability, and he hasn't really been terrible. He's got 14 stolen bases, but as aforementioned, Jose Ramirez has 20. Okay, here's a really interesting one. Jose Altuve has 44 RBIs. Jose Ramirez has 70 RBIs at the All-Star break. Jose Ramirez has 20 more home runs than Jose Altuve, 29-9. Now, this is the one that I found amazing. Jose Ramirez's OPS is 1,029 at the All-Star break. 1,029. Let that sink in for a second. Jose Altuve, very good player, still easily a top 5 or 6 player next year in drafts, okay, has an 864 OPS. So his OPS is like well over 150 points higher than Altuve. I want to point out some other just amazing things. I knew this pod was going to get ranty, but I cannot believe the season Jose Ramirez is having. Okay, Jose Ramirez is pulling this off with the lowest BABIP that he's had in the last 3 years. Okay, his BABIP is under 290. Okay, so it's not like he's getting incredibly lucky. Okay, he has a 13.6% walk rate versus an 11.5% K rate in this day and age while hitting 29 home runs and having 70 RBIs at the All-Star break. Okay? Some of the batted ball stuff is kind of odd to me, and I don't know if you looked at this or not, Andrew, but he has a 22.6% line drive rate, which is good, okay? But it was higher in 2016. But his hard contact rate, it's just an astonishing number to me, his hard contact rate is 40.8%. That means like he is hammering the ball better than 4 out of every 10 times he's at bat. Just hammering it. Okay? It's also really odd. He's going opposite field 10% less than just 2 years ago. Like he is pulling everything. Like if you look at his numbers, you see Jose Bautista from a few years ago. I mean, he is pulling the crap out of the ball. Okay? Then the reason you guys know that have listened to me for a long time know that I'm a positional flexibility whore. Okay? He is eligible at second and third base this year. He's not going to be next year. Okay? But second base has been terrible this year. Literally horrible. Okay? And one of the guys we're going to talk about later is a prime example of that. Okay? Second base has been terrible, and third base has been disappointing. So he's eligible at the best conceivable spots that you could own him. Like, it's not like he's shortstop eligible where shortstop is going crazy, right? Like, he's literally eligible at the best two spots he could be eligible at this year. He won't be next year, but that doesn't matter this year, right?
Well, he could still be next year, right? Because of that positional flexibility, they could move him to second and acquire a third baseman before the deadline, right?
Yeah, you absolutely never know, okay? Now, Jose Ramirez, the odd thing about putting him as maybe the most valuable fantasy player, of course, is that he is 20th in ADP. So it's not like you acquired him for a song, right? I get that. Okay, but Altuve was second in ADP, and Jose Ramirez is burying him. Like he's not beating him; he's burying him. Like I'm surprised that people are not talking about Jose Ramirez as a potential number one overall pick next year. If people wanted to justify Altuve after last year to be the number one pick, right? You have to say that Jose Ramirez, if he keeps up three quarters of the pace that he's on right now for the rest of the season, is got to be in the discussion to be the number one overall pick on his pure production alone. Okay, and the fact that Mookie Betts really wasn't that good last year, I'm going to make this crazy statement: I would rather have Jose Ramirez next year than Mookie Betts.
Well, This is the reason why I don't think it's that crazy. So, I mean, like, first of all, there's no chance, like, he shouldn't go first overall in any draft, right? It's just, like, to me, that is just drafting for the sake of saying, like, hey, everybody, look at me. I mean, Mike Trout's still undeniably the best player in baseball. Best player in fantasy baseball.
I'm going to give you a counter argument to this in a second. I completely get what you're saying, and I don't completely disagree.
But like, in the general terms of things, like, would you not agree that the first three picks in next year's draft should be Trout, in whatever order I suppose you fancy it, is that it should be Trout, Betts, and Ramirez?
That's not. And, I'm not hearing that from everyone, but I.
Well,
couldn't,
I mean, we're gonna hear all kinds of stuff. We're gonna hear all kinds of stuff. And to be honest, like, I was a person that going into this year's, like, I picked. I mean, this is where I think we can be really dumb about things, is that, like, we knew that Jose Altuve is a great player, but we know that the upside isn't as high as Mike Trout, and that's why he shouldn't have gone first overall to anyone who might have drafted him, and that's why you draft Trout first overall, because Trout can go, and much like it looks like you can now say Betts and possibly Ramirez can both do 40, like, like right now you're looking at what, a 40, could go 40-40?
That's just, and I just want to mention this, okay? If I was going to make the devil's advocate argument for Jose Ramirez at the number one pick next year, here's what I would say, okay? He's 25 years old. In the last 2 years, he's consistently just kept getting better. Like, he's had like a bad two-week stretch here or there, okay? So has Trout, by the way. But the point being is, it appears on paper that he's getting better. Like, I don't know how to explain this to you. Like, he's literally thrown my entire team up on his back in one of my leagues. Like, every single day I look and I think, oh, I didn't see much of my players. I'm like, oh, well, Ramirez had, you know, another three hits and another stolen base. I mean, he is just and that's not to say I would never, ever blame anybody for taking Mike Trout first. So please don't take this the wrong way, okay? Mike Trout is, you know, has been a baseball god, you know, since after his rookie season. But Jose Ramirez's ascension is what is impressing me so much. Like, he appears to consistently be getting better. Like, you know, like, that's one thing, like I said about Altuve, is like, Altuve really struggled. Like, he had a stretch early this year where he didn't hardly have any stolen bases. Maybe he's going to catch Jose Ramirez in stolen bases. That's altogether possible. But he's sort of had this wonky sort of, you know, power, no power thing going on. Altuve has, and Betts had that really bad batting average last year. I know we got unlucky, blah, 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 blah. Machado, you know, another guy who's had a bad season. Like, Jose Ramirez is a ascension, if you looked at it, it's like going at a straight angle up.
Yeah.
Like, there's...
Well, like, the funny thing about this, right, is that, like, with a little bit of luck, so if his BABIP goes back to last year, just last year, not even the year before, so it jumps back up to 319, and it was 333 the year before. So if he brings it back up to 319, you could conceivably see him finish the year hitting like 325 with 50 home runs, 120 runs scored, 130 RBIs, and 40 stolen bases.
I mean, I completely understand. Okay, this is a consistency versus ascension argument. Okay, but just think about the fact that we're having this argument at all. Okay, with a guy that we're also talking about, I acquired for Jacob Faria. you acquired for bits and pieces. Okay, not that I can't judge the value. But
essentially,
of a
yeah, my trade essentially was, it ended up being D. Gordon and Rafael Devers.
I mean, and Devers has a lot of potential, so I don't. And D. Gordon is a valuable fantasy player. Okay, but I acquired him for Jacob Faria.
Yeah, like roll away.
Yeah, I mean, nobody. Last year at this time, nobody believed in Jose Ramirez. Last year at this time, I shouldn't say nobody, but yeah, there was plenty of skepticism about Jose Ramirez, and now we're talking about him. Like, if you get him at pick 5 next year, I don't care what the format is, you are getting a steal and a half if you get him at pick 5 next year,
yep,
in my opinion. So I wanted to mention that. I mean, it's just
I totally agree, and it'll be really interesting, and I wish we, like, this is one thing I wish we paid more attention to across the span of time, is, like, and maybe this is something I can go back and create on my own, but, like, I think there's some interesting parallels between the two players of Altuve and Ramirez, because I think they're both discounted in the same ways for the same reasons. Yeah. And that everyone look at Altuve and, oh, he's too small, he'll only ever be an average and steals guy. And that was the exact same thing about Jose Ramirez. Oh, he's only ever going to hit for average and he'll steal some bases, but, like, he doesn't have any power, so throw it away. But, like, to look at, like, how the arc of ADP changed for that player over time, while they went from, like, hey, this guy's pretty good. Yeah, this guy's really good. Maybe he's going to win a batting title. Maybe he's going to steal the most bases. Oh, maybe he's going to go 30-30. Maybe he's going to go 50-30.
I just literally think for some reason this is going relatively under the radar. And I for the life of me, I can't figure
out. I totally agree. And I think it's entire. And there's two reasons for it. In my eyes, is that one, I don't think anyone's really watching the Cleveland Indians all that closely outside of probably those in the greater Ohio, like Cleveland area. And that's because, and I've I know I say this all the time, but the rest of that division is so terrible that like many of their games just appear to be unwatchable, because who wants to watch the Indians play the White Sox or the Tigers or the Twins or the Royals?
Don't forget the Royals. The Royals are the worst team, by the way.
And they're going to get worse.
Ouch.
So like, I think that causes a lot of it. And it's like, Cleveland doesn't like, I don't know if you've, like, have you watched many Indians games?
Well, I mean, I have a little bit just because I'm very heavy on Clevinger, who's kind of been their most disappointing pitcher. And the Cleveland Indians half hour is going to continue here in a second. But
when you look at their, like, would they have home games? It is, I don't know if maybe, like, they price tickets at, like, $200 to sit in the top levels or something, but that stadium is always empty no matter how good that team is.
I can't quite figure it out. I mean, Cincinnati has sort of the same issue to me, and I can't believe it. Like, even though, I mean, Cleveland is obviously, and I mean obviously, you know, in contention to win the World Series this year. I mean, it, you know, first of all, the, like you said, the division is handed to them on a platter. But second of all, look at that rotation. I mean, in a way, that rotation hasn't even lived up to its billing.
Yeah, like, I could be the fifth starter, and they would still win 90 games.
Yeah. I would love to watch your starts, by the way. That would be fascinating. I'm imagining that you would throw below the hitting speed of most major league hitters, which I think would be very fascinating to watch. I don't know. You might walk like the bat boy even, but, I mean, it would be fun to watch.
Yeah, no one's showing up to watch me throw, like, 74. Probably what would be like between 75 and 82 miles an hour.
Oh, you can throw that? I don't think I can throw that hard, so I'm impressed by that in and of itself. Well, anyway, I think I was pretty ranty on Jose Ramirez, and after I made that chart, I mean, I'm just this is eye-popping. 70 RBIs and 29 home runs. Anyway, when we never thought he was that kind of player. Remember, he was a placeholder. They brought him up to hold the place until Lindor got called up. I remember that as plain as day.
Who everyone also thought would never hit.
Yeah. So we're doing a great job. Prospect analysts are doing a great job on middle infielders, I'll tell you that. All right, now let's talk about another guy that I know we are both sky high on, and this would be the most valuable pitcher to me so far in the first half. That's a little under the radar. That's Trevor Bauer, okay? 27 years old, 2.24 ERA, and a 1.08 whip, but he has been absolutely lights out recently. Okay. Not that he was ever bad, by the way. His highest ERA in a month this year is 2.81 in any given month. Okay. His July ERA is 1.19. And I just want to list, since May 27th, here is his strikeout totals per start: 13, 11, 12, 12, 8, 11, 8, 8, 12, and 7. Like, he's just ripping it up right now. I mean, okay, and I just want to mention, he was the 48th pitcher off the board in ADP, okay, behind Rich Hill, Alex Wood, Dallas Keuchel, and Luis Castillo, some of the pitchers that went ahead of him in ADP. So I know you sent me some confirmation, because Justin and I talked about Trevor Bauer some on the podcast last week, and I just want to iterate that Andrew is in the belief with me that Trevor Bauer is in the discussion to be a top 10 pitcher off the board next year. So give us your pitch for that, your bit of agreement, if you will.
Well, yeah, I mean, first, you have, you know, 11.55 K per nine, highlighted by the strikeout numbers that you just previously recited. His walk numbers are down. He's barely giving up any home runs, and his BABIP number is normal. It is 303. So, and his left on base is also normal at 76.9. So nothing there. Like, the BABIP and the left on base tell me that he's not doing anything. He's not getting super lucky to produce the numbers that he has today, which is, you know, a 2.24 ERA, which is matched by his FIP, and his ex-FIP is 306, so a little higher. But when, so like, I would be of the opinion right now that if you could, and I know this would be putting all of your eggs in one basket, but if I could, on a fantasy team, just own the Cleveland Indians rotation, I think I would probably win pitching.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kluber's not having his best year, but he's certainly been very, very good, and he's had stretches of complete dominance. And I think you're probably seeing Carlos Carrasco's floor for a lot of this season. I mean, he's been better lately.
Carrasco's
sure.
also been really – I think Carrasco's been unlucky this year. He is a guy who has – I mean, he's almost had a 10 K per nine, so 9.82. His walk, he's only giving up 2 walks per nine. He's got a 313 BABIP, but his ERA is at 412. But his FIP and his XFIP are both like under 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, that's not bad for a complimentary piece for a starting rotation.
Yeah,
I don't think Clevinger hasn't been good for him either. Like, really, not that he's been unserviceable. And I was a little bit too. I took a little bit of his sample size from last year and overextended it a bit this year. I would be the first to admit that with Clevinger. But to say that he's a serviceable number four starter, I think is probably an understatement even in this day and age. Yeah. So I see exactly what you're saying there. I want to play a little game with you, Andrew, off the cuff here. I'm going to give you some pitchers in comparison, and you tell me which one you would prefer to have next year. Trevor Bauer or Zach Greinke?
Bauer.
How about Trevor Bauer or Aaron Nola?
I'm going to take Bauer on that one.
Wow. Okay. I might take Nola, but that's only means
it's iffy. It's close.
I'm meteorically high on both of them.
The only
say meteor because that means it's coming crashing down. I don't think it is. I think the floor of both those pitchers means that they deserve to be in the discussion. I mean, I wouldn't be astounded if somebody took Bauer as high as like number six or number seven next year. How about Trevor Bauer or Madison Bumgarner?
I want to say I would take Bauer. And so this is, and the reason for this is I think we get too caught up in groupthink a little bit, and that like everyone's going to tell us that it should be Bumgarner. And the reason for it is that he's, you know, he plays for the Giants, and it's a great place to, you know, that home park is great to pitch in. But I think when I really think about it, like Bumgarner has not been good since he has not been great since he came back from his, you know, his dirt bike accident. And I think there's a case to be made that, you know, he does also have to go to Coors a few times a year. I mean, he does have to play against, like, the NL West is not a slouch's division at this point in time. I mean, outside of the Padres, the other four teams are all have pretty good lineups. The Dodgers consistently is kind of up and down based on injuries and who they've spent, you know, a small country's fortune on, but it's not really rosy to me out in the NL West. So in this case, because of like putting everything into context, I think there's reason to say Bauer has continuously gotten better. He's going like the AL Central is not going to be any better next year, possibly will continue to be worse. So Bauer might have the easier path to success.
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. And one thing about his quirky path to where he is now is that he doesn't really have as much mileage as you might think. You know, on the arm itself, whereas, you know, a guy like Bumgarner was romped and stomped for a few years in a row. I mean, really deep playoff runs, you know, pretty crazy the way that he was actually used and abused there for a while. So there's that to be said as well. And also, the Giants, I mean, if you look at the Giants lineup, they've acted pretty cash-strapped, and they have not done dramatic things to make that offense better. Okay? And I'm sorry, but the skeletons of Andrew McCutcheon, who hasn't been terrible this year, and Evan Longoria. I mean, do not make up for Gorkys Hernandez as like a middle of the lineup hitter. I mean, I think we underestimate exactly how bad San Francisco's lineup is. Like, they're overperforming to be this bad. Like, I mean, I think that's a very, very fair statement. I mean, they're, Brandon Crawford's having an incredible year for him. This is his ceiling, though. Like, he's not going to get better than this. You know what I mean? I mean, he's not a multifaceted kind of player that you're overly concerned about. Posey has really been ridden hard, too. So I think it's pretty fair to say that you're going to get a lot more support and a lot weaker competition. All of the peripheral things you think about in a pitcher should go to Bauer over Bumgarner next year.
Yeah, and the other thing I just want to touch on with Bauer before we leave this part of the conversation is that I actually think the biggest thing that people detract from him is actually his biggest strength, and that's that he's been such a tinkerer, and he's but when you really think about it, like, we're trying to detract from Bauer from being a student of the game and doing everything in his power to get better as a pitcher. And that really doesn't make any sense, right? Like, he's a guy, like, I get that his personality doesn't necessarily lead to him being a fan favorite, but, like, you are seeing results of that off-season work. Like, I don't know if you saw, he has a two-seamer that has more spin than his curveball and his slider. Like, there was a pitcher's list in one of last week in their daily, like, best pitchers of the week. Like, it's getting classified as a cutter, but it's actually a two-seamer because and it's moving, like, inches from, like, essentially from the left to the right from his arm. It's crazy.
Well, I just want to mention, okay, if you think we're overhyping Trevor Bauer, right, I want you to do is I want you to watch a start. That's what I want you to do, okay? Because, you mentioned the 11 and a half Ks per nine. He has 175 strikeouts in 136 innings, okay? First of all, like, sometimes putting the numbers puts an exclamation point on it, okay? And his breaking stuff is Bugs Bunny shit filthy. Like, it's just nasty. Like, his stuff is nasty. Like, he is worth the price of admission to watch pitch. And it's kind of crazy because he's not this big hulking beast that you sort of expect to see in a pitcher, I mean, he doesn't look the part necessarily, personally, but and maybe that adds to his deception. But I just want to mention, I think, and you framed it perfectly. It's easy to not think much about the Cleveland Indians when they could bring up their AAA team for the rest of the year and win that division handily. That's what it feels like. That might not exactly be true. It would be a really curious experiment. I would love to watch it unfold. But I mean, that's what it feels like. It
Yeah,
feels like
well, I'd love to watch it unfold from a distance. I'm not sure I actually want to watch the games, but I mean, yeah, the only other thing is if more if, as my memory continues of Trevor Bauer continues to come through is like if you're I feel like if there's anyone listening that's in high school or has kids that are in high school that love baseball and want to be a pitcher, like Trevor Bauer learned how to throw 90 miles an hour. Trevor Bauer in high school only threw like 80 miles an hour, and he's added almost 15 miles an hour to his fastball through all of that work. So like there is a path to being successful if you really want it. And he is a guy that is showing that he really wants it through all stages of the game. Like, it's fascinating to think about, like, when we see kids in high school and we see people talk about prospects of like, well, he doesn't throw hard enough. He doesn't throw hard enough. Like, there are gains available to be made. And he is somebody that is showing us that, like, with enough hard work that you can do it. And to the best of my knowledge, he is not a Tommy John guy.
Yeah, he has been unbelievable, and I know, like I said, it's been a very quirky ascension for him. He sort of ticked off some people along the way because he didn't want to go through only the traditional forms of refining his skills. And, you know, while it works like this, we say that's great. And if it didn't work, well, then we would probably be looking at it differently. I'll be the first one to admit that. But anyway, I think by and large, people are sort of underestimating exactly how crazy this has been. And Justin gave us the counterpoint last week. You know, the counterpoint is, you know, if he tinkers with something just the wrong way, maybe you're going to see him drop back. But I'm starting to get to the point where I think if he's healthy and he stays on the mound, I think his floor is still top 25-ish at the worst. That's what it feels like to me right now. What do you think his floor is for next year,
Yeah,
barring injury?
I think that's probably accurate. I mean, I feel like I've almost hit the point where I want to like let everyone forget that he exists. It's just to let that ADP continue to slide a little bit, because it seems like there's more detractors than those who want him than are trying to inflate his price. So he's a guy I'll be really interested to see when ADP start rolling around, especially if we do the. I assume there'll be Mason mocks again this year, which will give us some early indicators as to how the industry sees this guy.
And speaking of which, my three sport league, and to sort of break this up before we go to the LVPs, my three sport league starts drafting on Friday. So if you follow me on Twitter at Just Chucking It, I'm going to post a lot of the picks on Twitter that I find fascinating and interesting. There'll be a lot of basketball picks early in that format, but there's a rumor that that Mike Trout is going to go within the top five picks for sure, which is kind of crazy. Although it is an OBP league, so I understand it. But that will give us a bit of very, very, that'll be hyper, uber, that's uber early info for next draft season. That'll be way before the Mason mocks, which of course will give us a bigger cross-reference of info. All right, well, let's go from the most valuable fantasy players in the first half to the least valuable. And I want to talk about Rougned Odor. He was the 10th second baseman in ADP. I kept being amazed at how early he was going in my drafts, and I do not own a single iota of Rougned Odor, which has been very helpful. The one format that you could own him in, I thought going into the year, was a home run derby, and my wife made that dreadful error, and she's paying the price for that. Like I said, second base is terrible. I, in that exact same home run derby, decided that I should take Jonathan Scope, so that's not exactly working either, to say the least. Okay, but some of the second basemen that Odor was taken in front of: Javi Baez, Ozzie Albies, and Scooter Gennett. And that's at a terrible position. 239 batting average, 6 home runs, 5 stolen bases, and 24 RBIs. By the way, those 5 stolen bases have come at the cost of 6 caught stealings. Okay? And the amazing part about how bad those numbers are is that he's hitting 286 in July. Okay? So before that, he was even far more dreadful. But even in July, by the way, his quote-unquote hot streak, he has 2 home runs and 5 RBIs. Okay? And this is one of my favorite stats. Because if you want to do very, very poorly, I want you to think about what this split means. Okay? Rougned Odor is hitting 219 versus righties. Like, I don't care what you do against lefties. You're not going to make up for hitting 219 versus righties. Yeah, you're just about, you could hit 800 versus lefties and you still will not look all that good if you're hitting 219 versus, you know, what turns out to be like 85% of all pitching at the big league level. So anyway, why don't you expound? You think I'm being overly harsh here on Rougned Odor, or do you think he needs to be in the discussion for the worst player? I mean, there was other players in thought. I thought about Chris Davis from the Orioles, but we kind of knew he was a boom or bust guy to begin with, et cetera. But anyway, my under-the-radar least valuable player for the first half is Rougned Odor. You concur? And who else would you have thought about in this case?
I think there's a reasonable case to be made. I mean, all the numbers you. As a person that actually owns Rougned Odor in several spots, one thing I've tried to just block out of my mind is that I keep running him out there every week, for lack of a better option. But yeah, I mean, he definitely stands out. I feel like there's a, I mean, some of the, like, it's hard to think of them as like the least valuable, but there's definitely some guys out there that have not, have dropped off in ways that we weren't expecting. I think a guy like for your ADP, a player like Anthony Rizzo has been a massive disappointment. You know, there's some, if you were really big on Noah Syndergaard, you haven't gotten a lot of starts, which has become, you know, kind of the expected narrative with him is how much will he start. But I mean, the other player who I think is very strangely ends up in the same conversation because they feel like they're sometimes the same guy as his teammate Joey Gallo, who is also amazingly hitting 187 and in a major league and has played 93 games so far this year, but has the upside at least of hitting 22 home runs. So yeah, Odor's terrible. Like, there's don't know how else to say it. I was a guy that's on him. I don't think I took him extremely early. I think I was taking him around the 150 to 200 range. But yeah, like I thought he'd be good no matter what. That no matter what happened this year, like I rested on Odor will be better this year than he was last year. And looking at his numbers last year, it was like, yeah, it's going to be better. Because I thought the average would come up. And it has, but everything else has fallen off the face of the earth. So, I mean, it's just, he's going to hit, 12 home runs and give you 10 steals? Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, we used to play years ago, before Razzball existed, we played a form of fantasy called Bozo Ball, where we tried to acquire as many at-bats as we possibly could without production.
Right? Yeah.
And going into the year, your thought would be, well, you know, Odor does have plenty of downside, but he's probably going to hit 30 home runs.
Yeah.
And he's not on pace to get halfway there. Like, this would be like the Bozo Ball gold pick of all time, because that contract is like covering over the – is just hovering over the Texas Rangers, and they pretty much have to run him out there.
Yeah. And I mean, it's – the Rangers are really bad, and there's a lot of really of reasons for it. Yeah. Like, their best player in the first half is without a doubt Shin-Soo Choo.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the guy that you could have gotten probably in the 300s this year.
Well, I've said it multiple times about these teams. When you know you don't have any pitching, I don't really understand what you did with your offseason. Like, at least make an attempt, okay? Like, going into the year, we knew that the Baltimore Orioles pitching staff was likely to be brutally horrible, okay? That's if everything went right. Like, if you got what you could get out of Bundy and Gausman, you still knew that you were not going to get anything out of Cashner and, you know, Cashner and these other plugs they run out there. I mean, you knew they were going to be brutal, okay? And Texas's pitching staff was worse on paper. It was worse.
Yeah.
And they've gotten a bounce back, quote unquote, season from Cole Hamels. Like, their pitching could be even worse than what it is. Which, you know, like, there's no excuse for that. Like, if I was a fan base, right? If I'm a member of a fan base and the executives can't do better than that, right? Like, give me a sliver of hope. Like, do something. Find reclamation projects. You know, at least be rolling the dice on something. We knew they were going to be terrible, and they are god-awful putrid. Like, that's inexcusable.
And I think we see this, like, developing cycle that happens and more often is that you have teams like the Rangers and, like, the Blue Jays and, like, the Tigers who all were in various ranges of, like, we can be competitive in the last 5 years, we will make the playoffs. And, like, when doing so, you sacrifice so much of your future, because it wasn't that long ago that everyone looked at the Rangers and said, like, this might be a model organization. Look how much talent they've got in the minor leagues while they're really good in the major leagues. The Cubs are also well on their way to be going down this path as well, where suddenly you don't have any talent left in the minor leagues to supplant what's in the major leagues, and free agency is a wasteland. So, you know, you're left in these spots where it's like, well, I guess we'll go sign Doug Fister. Let's go get Mike Minor. Like, it's one thing. Like, here's the only upside play I can give you on this. If from the position of the organization is that, like, we'll go and sign a bunch of these, like, we'll sign a bunch of guys in their 30s and hopefully they'll figure it out and they'll be really good. And then when the deadline comes, we'll turn them around and we'll get prospects for them. If it works out, you know, we'll rebuild our farm system that way, and we'll get a bunch of good relievers and we'll trade all those guys and we'll get prospects. Except when it doesn't work, you're still left with this, like, you're left with worst case scenario, and that's all of your starters are bad. You still haven't figured out who's closing your games, and Tim Lincecum certainly wasn't the answer. And now you have what looks like an albatross contract with some of your players who you thought were cornerstones 2 or 3 years ago.
It is an amazing free fall that the Texas Rangers have been in. Let's switch to my least valuable pitcher. And there's a number. I will avoid the swinging strike soapbox as much as possible within this context. Okay. Now, I want to do this sort of a team concept approach. Okay. Going into last year, if you had just looked at Eugenio Suarez's offensive numbers and Scooter Gennett's offensive numbers, right, you would have thought to yourself, wow, this Cincinnati team has made this incredible turnaround. It is more than likely what you would have thought. I mean, that, think about how finding those two guys has been amazing. They've gotten an amazing amount of production from players that other organizations had completely given up on. Eugenio Suarez has been unbelievable. He could have been the guy that we talked. If we were going to go with a lower ADP MVP for the first half, it could have easily been Eugenio Suarez. And Scooter Gennett has been ridiculous. You know, he's got a batting title in his sight. And he was just literally left for dead. And people thought he was never going to play against lefties. Okay, but still, they have not found hardly any pitching. Now, I will say this. I love what they did in the Mets trade to get the pitcher from the Mets. I love what they did. That made perfect sense for a rebuilding team. And that's going to work in their favor because they're going to get some pieces back for him. Okay, which is great. But Luis Castillo was a top 20 pitcher last year, this year in ADP. Okay? And he has less Ks than innings, despite having that gaudy swinging strike rate, which has done nothing but make people keep throwing him out there. Right? Now, I dug through the game log to find some gems for exactly how bad Castillo has been. See, he's had this ability to be bad, but not be so completely horrible in any individual start that you would think, oh, there's no way I can roster him, which keeps you hanging on to what's going on. You know, you're on board yet in a lot of instances, especially deeper leagues. Okay? He hasn't pitched more than 6 2/3 innings in a single start all year. Not once. Okay? Bauer has done that 13 times. He has given up 4 or more earned runs 8 times, I'm only going to accentuate that more by giving you the flip side. Okay, somehow or another, he has not had a shutout start. I'm not talking about a shutout, like a complete game shutout. He has not had a start where he has not given up an earned run all year long. And you look through, he's got 4 2/3, 4 1/3, 5 innings, 5 1/3. I mean, he's not pitching into games, and he's never not giving up runs. So it just keeps adding up. He's got a 5.49 ERA and a 1.38 whip with less than 9 Ks per 9. I mean, part of the reason that he's the LVP is because he's killing you slowly. He's like, you know, he's killing you with a dull butter knife is what he's doing. And you can't listen to a fantasy analyst anywhere who's saying, oh, well, you know, he's not going to turn this around because of how it's happened with all the swinging strikes. And that's the stat of the day, right? Everyone's been like, oh, well, he's going to turn around. He's going to be great. He's going to be great yet. He's going to be great. Well, by the time he's not great, okay, your season's already over. So to me, that makes him the least valuable player. So what do you think of this analysis?
It's hard for me to call him the least valuable pitcher, at least. And that's just because there's some other, like, I just pulled up some early ADP data from NFBC, and there's some guys in here that you're also going to look at and go, yeah, that one didn't go really well. I mean, to just make my note on one of the silly things that we do in fantasy baseball, especially the more competitive league you're in, is that you drafted Luis Castillo high. Like, I think he was going in, like, what, the top 150? Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I had him.
He's some higher than that.
He's a top 20 pitcher, so it's higher than that. I think he went in the top – a lot of drafts, he went in the top 70 picks. I can pull it up.
Yeah, I in this ADP data, he is going at 103. So you drafted him high. He has peripheral numbers that lead people to believe that he could be more successful, and everyone's too embarrassed to let go. Because no one wants to be the guy that lets him go, and then 3 weeks later did exactly what you thought he was going to do, and now he's picked up on someone else's team, and you've been outbid on Fab, or someone else had the quicker finger, or whatever your free agency system might have been. But at the same time, you can't trade him because everyone else is still going to hold you to the actual numbers and say, well, I'm not, like, what are you, like, sure, I'll give you, like, I don't know, like a reliever or something for him if you need to. But, like, here are some other pitchers that went in the top 100 that have not performed well. Carlos Carrasco in this ADP was 34th. Not a very good 34th pick. Kenley Jansen at 38. That one hasn't worked out well. Robbie Ray at 42. That one's probably up in contention for worst fantasy pitcher of the first half because he's barely played. When he has, he's been terrible. Chris Archer has an at 51. His ERA's back over 4. Just working my way down here. Nola has been a steal at 66. Shohei Ohtani may never pitch again. He's got two small tears in his UCL, and I feel like the Angels are going out of their way to try to make sure that one of those tears goes all the way through as they're continuing to let him play and stretch out that arm. But, like, Jose Quintana at 76 has been pretty bad. Ken Giles at 86 isn't even in the major leagues right now. So...
Yeah, there's some bad ones for sure.
Yeah, the overall lesson here is we're really bad at predicting starting pitching. And this is NFBC. Like, this is, like, an early NFBC, so this has a lot of analysts and a lot of people that know that quote unquote know what they're doing, right? So pitching's hard to predict. So,
well, last year's ADP had Luis Castillo as the 92nd pick off the board on average. He went as high as pick 52 and as low as pick 172. So there was definitely some you could get some variables out of it. And I guess I was just pointing to the fact that he, you know, and trying to exclude injury in a lot of the other players, like, yeah, Carlos Martinez hasn't been very good. Obviously, Yu Darvish has been an unmitigated disaster. Robbie Ray has been abysmal. I mean, there's pitchers above him that have been bad, but there's been at least sort of injury thoughts on a lot of those guys.
Yeah. Like,
somehow or another, Luis Castillo has regularly gone out there and just absolutely stunk it up at a rate that we just thought was far below what I thought his floor was. I thought his floor was a lot higher than what he's pitched so far this year. If somebody said, well, what's the worst case scenario with Luis Castillo? I just said, well, you know, maybe, you know, 4.3, 4.5 ERA maybe with 10.5, 11, you know, over 10, say right around 10 Ks per nine, and instead he's under 9 Ks per nine, and he's over a point higher than that in his ERA. So, you know, I guess that's why it comes to mind so much for me. And I do own shares of Castillo, two of them, which is, you know, very, very painful. Well, I mean, I don't own them anymore in those cases. I mean, I finally have cut bait, especially in the shallower league that I owned him in. But it's been very, very, very hard to suffer through for Luis Castillo. And I think the disturbing thing for the Reds is everything that's gone well offensively for them. You know, like they have plenty of all-stars that you can watch in the next couple of days. Everything that's gone well has really, in with their relief pitching and with their hitting, everything that's gone well has gone equally bad with their starting rotation. I just don't think that they have they don't have the funds to try and bolster up their rotation through free agency, and they needed Luis Castillo very, very badly to be an anchor for the staff. And instead of being an anchor holding them up, he's an anchor pulling them down at this point. You agree with that?
Yeah. And among one of many, I mean, unfortunately, I think, because, yeah, their starting pitching's been really bad. And it's unfortunate because if they had starting pitching, like, they could be contending, right?
Oh, yeah.
But from an organizational standpoint, like, that puts them in a pretty compromised place because you don't have any starting pitching and you've got all kinds of hitting, but you're the worst team in your division still. So, like, what are you going to do about it without, I mean, I suppose the good news is that, you know, they've got players like Nick Senzel, and Taylor Trammell was the MVP of the Futures game yesterday, and Hunter Green will be up in 4 years probably, but it won't be surprising to see them, you know, possibly sell on some of these hitters to properly restart the build of this team, because unfortunately by the time the next wave of guys are up and at their peak, the current set of very productive hitters they have will be well past.
Well, I mean, I did the best I could, too, to search through. You know, I almost went with Dexter Fowler. I mean, I did, but he seems to have a slight uptick right now. But I did the best I could because I wanted to point out a Cardinal to sort of get under Matt Thompson's, you know, put an extra burr in Matt Thompson's saddle right now.
Well, you could have also thrown in Luke Weaver if you wanted. He hasn't been really good this year and went pretty high.
Yeah, that's quite true. I mean, I looked up Marcelo Ozuna, but he's not been quite as horrible as I thought he was. I mean, he's not good. Not what they hoped for by any means, but not as horrible as I think he could be, you know, if everything goes wrong. So I couldn't really include him. So
Greg Holland, though, would have been pretty fitting.
Yeah, the Greg Holland thing hasn't exactly worked, no. But anyway, I just wanted to sort of do a lighthearted here over the All-Star break look at some people. And I think we did actually frame these guys within their context pretty well as far as talking about a lot of other fantasy fantasy pitchers and hitters that are doing similar things, both ascending and descending accordingly. So no, I definitely think we covered that for you. Without too much further ado, Andrew, I don't think we got your Twitter moniker early on, so why don't you give us that?
Sure. You can find me at Andrew K. Dewhurst.
And I can be found at Just Chucking It. And I want Andrew to imagine this. Like, I am trying to completely set up this three sport league while preparing to draft for it, and like I feel grossly behind in football. On Friday the draft starts. It's Monday at recording time. On Friday the draft starts, and I'm relatively new to Google Documents and Google Sheets, and I've got like sprawling amounts of you know, Google Sheets everywhere that I'm trying to make sure are going to lead everybody through this draft, and trying to set up you know, payment options for people to, so I can, you know, give out prize money, and at the same time I'm trying to listen to three different sports worth of podcasts at the exact same time. I mean, I have a break. I don't really need to study for baseball, so that's kind of a break, but I'm averaging like 2 to 3 NBA podcasts a day and 2 to 3 NFL podcasts a day to try and get ready for those portions of the draft, which will be the first portions of the draft themselves. So it feels absolutely
Yeah,
mind-bogglingly
it's
crazy.
I it's not an envious like it's not a task I'm envious of. Like I thought about what it I'm not even sure where to start with like a three sport draft. I mean, I'm not participating for different reasons, but I was just like, where do you even like, 'cause I don't know much about basketball, so it would be like, I don't know, like do I just draft all football and like let it flood its way down? And then like as things fall apart, you sell into the next sport or like and just like trying to organize all of this would be a mess. Like I couldn't imagine trying to like lay out all the players, try to get people in line to like actually do the things you need them to do so that you don't have somebody drafting up guys not available and having to deal with that mess. I mean, I ran our FWFB football draft last year, and it was difficult enough with just 12 people across like five time zones. So like adding two more sports into that would be less than favorable.
Well, I mean, I think the difficulty that I've been trying to point out is like next year it won't be nearly this difficult.
Yeah, because you've already done the work, you'll be able to make changes, learn from mistakes. But this year,
I make the comparison. It's like a teacher teaching their first year of a class versus teaching the following years. I mean, once you've already done the subject, I mean, you know the subject already, and you're just sort of going off what's worked in the past, like you said. But this has just been I was not expecting it to be as rough as it's been, and I've really caught some breaks. Like the stuff on Google Sheets and Google Documents has gone quite a bit better than I feared it might. I caught some breaks, and it's been ridiculous, and I still am struggling. Like I see names, and I'm still not sure. My mind is so full of stuff. Like that Derek Geis guy is like somebody who's I can't place who he plays for at the moment. That kind of thing over and over again when I'm trying to incorporate 3 years worth of or I'm incorporate three sports worth of potential rookies and prospects into the draft pool. I think that's what I'm finding the most difficult thing to do, and that's always real tricky, like when we're drafting for next baseball season. How high should you be on Alex Reyes for next year? How high should you be on Victor Robles for next year? But football and basketball can be even trickier. Colin Sexton is ripping up the summer league for some people in Cleveland. How draftable is he in a 14-team basketball league? When you don't play basketball regularly, that's pretty hard. That's a pretty hard dynamic to digest.
Yeah.
But anyway, I'm also in the middle of that. We are going to have, and you guys will see this come through, we're going to, after we get through the top 10 picks, well, maybe 15, depending on how it falls exactly, 10 to 15 picks in each sport. We're going to have a podcast that goes on all three FWFB channels. So it'll come out on the basketball channel, it'll come out on the football channel, and the baseball channel. And people will probably be making fun of me making bad basketball picks because that seems to be something that I'm prone to. Very much so. So, anyway, it's going to be really interesting. The other dynamic is that these guys have not played three sport before. Everybody, basically, me and one other guy have played three sport that I know of. So, that creates another interesting learning curve as to, how people want to draft and how they want to spread out their drafts per sport. So, that's going to be something interesting to track. Anyway, sorry about that sidetrack for you guys, but I thought I wanted to vent with Andrew about it, and so I could have done something where I told you that the fantasy baseball analysis was completely over, so I saved you guys the rest of that time. But you will be hearing about the three-sport draft, I'm sure, going forward on basically all three of the FWFB channels. Anyway, this was Chuck Anderson, and this was a concept slash topic podcast. Thanks so much for your time, Andrew. And we will be back at you next week when we can preview actual games instead of home run derbies and whatever you want to summarize the All-Star game as, just a showcase more than anything. All right, enjoy your baseball weekend, and we'll have stuff to talk to you guys about again next week. Thanks for the time and the listen.
fall.